Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Range Podcast. I'm Ricky Brewley, and with me is Jake Hollywood Iverson. Join us at the Archery Range, where we'll tell stories from the hunt, discuss technical bow shooting tactics and gear, and pick the brains of some of the most successful people to ever shoot a bow. Whether you're about to shoot that X for the win or send an arrow at a trophy buck, this podcast is for you. Range Podcast is brought to you by Vapor Trail Archery, makers of the best bowstrings money can buy, originators of limb-driven arrow rest technology, and innovators of stokerized stabilizer systems.
Welcome to the Range, everybody. I'm your host, Ricky Brewley, and I'm sitting here with Mr. Hollywood. I was able to get him away from the day-to-day. How you doing?
Excited.
Excited.
This is that new segment, one word.
Excited. Yep, that's yeah. Right. You're just doing one word.
Yep. That's right. We're sponsored by Monster today, so we're ready to kick it.
Yep.
Yeah, unleash the beast.
There's monsters in the room right now.
Yep.
So let's elaborate on that excitement
a little bit. We're coming back to Frank from part one, going into part two of turkey hunting.
Yes.
Because we all should be next week. Mm-hmm. So, or when this airs, right? We'll be turkey hunting. So, yeah.
Yes.
Part two, we're going to get in with Frank Welsh, our guest, again.
Yeah.
And
welcome back.
We'll be talking all things turkey hunting, or the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, we're going into a little bit of a deeper dive. We weren't able to get into it last week, and I know that if we had dove in, we probably could have talked for two more hours. I mean, we haven't even before we got started with this, I think we've been sitting here talking for a solid half hour.
Yes. Yeah. No, so, it's hunting tips. You know, everybody's got an idea and what works for them. So, but that's, again, getting that information out there and then trial and error.
Yep.
At least you can start with something and then kind of mold that into something that works for you. Mm-hmm. So just happy to share that stuff.
For sure. For sure. Well, welcome to the Range, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. If you want to watch the video version of this episode, you can head over to the Vapor Trail YouTube channel. Give us a like, subscribe, and hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. And, of course, if you're listening, give us a rating and a review. Only 5 stars will do. So today, as Hollywood said, we're going to take a deeper dive into the turkey hunting stuff. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the previous episode with Frank, we get into talking about like blind placement, scouting, equipment setup, broadheads, arrows, bow, the whole works there. We're probably going to dive maybe even a little bit deeper on some of that stuff today. But just make sure that if you have not listened to that one, head back, listen to that one first, and then come back to this so you can take that deeper dive with us on turkey hunting with a bow and arrow specifically. And so first thing that I thought we would get into again is just kind of going back to some of the equipment. We were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, and you guys were talking about practice. We were talking about people taking really long shots and the ethics behind all of that. And that's a whole nother episode that we could talk about all of that. But, you know, practice, right? Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, especially for turkey hunting, you're going to be basically either from a sitting position or a kneeling position. So that dynamically, it can be a lot different than standing. So, you know, because you're basically operating from your hips, you know, your torso is more of the movement. And then from your knees up, where you can actually incorporate your knees from up to your torso. Knees don't work for me anymore just because of my foot stuff. So I'm basically just in a sitting position. So, you know, make sure that you can draw your bow cleanly from that position. Maybe, you know, figure out like what type of a chair you're going to be sitting in, because that's important too. I definitely like a chair that has some sort of a swivel 360 all the way around. So if the bird's moving, I can just keep my body position in the correct position, because if you start to go out of that position, especially when I'm going forward, because normally I'm this way and I'm aiming that way. So if we start to go this way, your draw length can shrink, and now you're going to have issues with where your impact's going to be, and it's going to be a lot harder to hold your bow because you're creeping forward, you're getting off your let off, and then also to the opposite, you get where you're going to be starting to impact, you know, coming across your chest. If you have binos that are on or a rangefinder, so if you have something that's pivoting, you can just move smoothly through that whole process. A lot of times people just get that, you know, go to Walmart, get the $5 chair, and they've got the arms and everything, and they don't practice with that equipment. You know, they're in the range. Yeah, there's something that is 360, and you're doing that. And then they get in there, and it's go time, and they just find themselves, oh, my God, I felt like I had zero ability to draw my bow, or when I shot, I hit this, I hit a limb, that impacted the chair or whatever. So, you know, from the equipment standpoint of what you're going to be using to either the blind, the chair, you take all that in consideration, and, you know, you got to shoot out of it to figure out what you can and cannot get away with. Because even the height of your bow and being able to shoot out the windows, and because you don't want to shoot the material in the windows, mm-hmm. that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the different ranges, of course. You know, you want to be able to shoot, you know, 20 yards very effectively. And then, of course, we talked about that in the last episode a little bit, is if you get where that 7 yards creeps up, and if they're closer, you need to figure out what pin to use going down, you know, whether it's your 30 or a 40 or a 45. You know, if it's 2, 3 to 7 yards, you're going to have to know that. So that's kind of a little bit of a tip thing for me right out of the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing too, just like you're saying, and I think we touched on this a little bit in the previous episode about just making sure that you're, you know, wearing the equipment that you're going to hunt in, especially like if you're going to be wearing a face mask, or if you're doing something like that. Like Frank, I know you like to, we talked about that too,
burn cork, an actual cork,
and then you don't have the face mask on, because mm-hmm. that affects your, you know, when you're at full draw, that affects your anchor point and everything, and yep. how that feels. And so you have to familiarize yourself with all of those things, because I've been down that road before where I haven't practiced that way. Then suddenly I'm sitting in the blind and I come to full draw and I'm having a hard time finding my anchor point.
Absolutely.
It's kind of wonky. And then you're sitting there trying to kind of adjust, and you're trying to do this at full draw. And yeah, it's not good.
You don't want to be fishing around when it's go time, because they're going to come in and they're going to be gone then too. So you might just lose your opportunity. Mm-hmm. So you definitely don't want to do that.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And then the other thing is no different than like when you climb into a tree and you're whitetail hunting, right? Like always draw your bow back in a multitude of scenarios. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If a buck's going to come out over here, or, you know, same with turkeys. If you know, you're probably setting up your decoys in a way that would prompt them to come in from a certain direction, right? And we'll mm-hmm. get more into that.
Yep.
But knowing or having a good idea of which way or where they're going to come from, you want to draw your bow and get in that position and make sure that your elbow is not going to be bumping something behind you, or, you know what I mean? So make Correct. Sure you draw your bow in the blind prior to, you know, go time, just to make sure that you're not, again, having to kind of fiddle around and, you know, because you don't got a lot of time. Everything happens real fast.
And the thing is, too, it's going to be cool in the morning, so you're going to bulk up. You're probably going to have, you know, some insulative type stuff on that's a little bit more bulkier than like an evening sit. You're not going to, you're going to be able to wear thinner clothing. So yeah, keep that in mind too. You know, it'll still be 30 degrees and, you know, depending upon where you're at, if you're a little bit north of the state or south of the state, you know, that's going to influence what you're going to be wearing. So I try to have garments that it's like one system. I've got some heated garments and stuff that help a lot, so it just takes the edge off, because I hate bulking up because I don't want to have that string hitting anything. So just like lots of little things there, you know, you just want to make sure you're going to be able to hit that bird where, you know, it's a nice quick clean kill, so you got to put your time in.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, going back to what we're talking about with practicing, like for me, for example, I'm looking at doing a decap, so I'm with the arrow that I'm going to use, I'm practicing at very short distances, but I'm still shooting my other arrows out as far as I possibly can, because it's that aim small, miss small thing that you say all the time, where it's just like, you know, that's going to train you to stay, you know, to make sure that as you're practicing you're steadier, and you know what I mean, because when I, you know, it's funny when you're sitting at a and shooting at a X, you know, at 6 or 7 or 8 yards, you don't really have to, that pin doesn't float around near as much, you know what I mean? It's like you can pop those off fairly quickly and you're still pretty good. But you do that kind of stuff at 30, 40, you know, because I'm always going to have probably a mechanical head and a standard arrow in my quiver in case I got to take a longer shot. And if you're just sitting there practicing that short shot, you're not really working, you're not training those muscles and getting that muscle memory for, you know, holding on a tight target. So
I
make sure you're practicing out to distance still.
Well, and I always say too is, you know, whatever you're wanting to shoot, shoot another 10 yards. So if 20 is where you want to be efficient at that, you know, get to where you're getting very well at 20. But if you go to 30, you're going to find when you keep extending the range, and then your comfort zone is going to go, you're going to get, your groups will just get tighter at the shorter distances. So 20, okay, shoot 30, you know, then all of a sudden now you're going to want to shoot 30, now go 40, and et cetera, and just kind of rinse and repeat that. And so now you're just learning that, and it's just going to get better and better and better as time goes on.
Yeah, it's not really fully turkey relatable as far as doing a 60-yard shot, but what I've heard like some guys say is they take what they could shoot in their woods or what they are comfortable with, and then they double it. So not always do we have access to 120-yard range.
Right.
But, I mean, like for locally here, like the farthest we can get out is 80. I mean, you could go on the back parts and maybe get 100 yards, but that's what I like to do is shoot 80. Like majority of the time when I go out there, that's all I do. Like I'll pop one at 50, but everything under that is so, like, again, to your point, you practice farther because everything else is so easy. I'm like, why am I even shooting this? Like, I don't need to shoot at 20. We got that here. But then it's like, let's go shoot. I love just sending bombs at 80 and just keep on practicing. A lot of his form, you know, to get to where those groups are. And then it's like, after that, like you said, anything, I mean, after that, anything under 80 should be pretty easy. You know, I mean, I don't think I would take a shot on an animal that far, at least in the last year or so, because I haven't shot it near enough to where, like, ideally, I'd maybe even try and do something to get my heart rate up and everything else, you know, jump around and or run to the spot. I've seen other people do that too, where, you know, then you've got some pressure on you to try and get that shot off and, you know, doing a quick time, because that's the other thing you're up against. If you're going to go with a farther shot, like, you only have so much time, and then your heart rate's elevated, all that stuff. So practicing that farther range, I mean, 30 yards and then the bird moves out to 20, still going to be money. You know, if you're practicing at that 30.
Yeah, it's got to be very systematic. And, I mean, normally with the way that I set up my rigs, 100 yards is my max. Just for comfort, spacing, peep height, all of that, how it anchors, and my sight window, that lines up best for me. Other people can stretch it, you know, they're using more poundage or whatever. But again, you don't want to be fishing at any yardage. If you're fiddling around, it doesn't feel 100%, you just shouldn't be taking the shot at all. You shouldn't just back it down, you know, maybe. And it's good to figure out where your limitation is. You know, like for me, yeah, definitely 100 yards. That's my max. I mean, and right now, I definitely have not shot, sent the arrows that I used to send. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying to do, too, with my injury and stuff, too. It's a lot of sitting. So, again, that's a whole different thing. Yeah. So over time, I'll get it figured out again. But, you know, it's a whole process. But then again, too, this is like I've backed my range way down, so which is fine.
Yeah,
that just means I got to get closer.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, we talk about equipment and we talk about all these things that make, you know, that help us be successful. But there's no amount of equipment, no piece of equipment that can replace that practice, and that's the biggest key right there.
Correct.
I mean, it seems obvious, but so many people I think just rely on their equipment. And you know, and it is great. Like I can go several months without picking up my bow, and I can grab it and I can shoot, and I'm shooting fairly well. But it's not, again, once you get in under pressure, once you get into that
moment of opportunity, yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You know, it's tough. It's like you've never shot a bow in your life.
Yeah. All of a sudden. Yeah, it's like day one.
So, so I wanted to. It was making me think when I was talking about the arrow deal. When I shot my first bird with a bow, I was with Ears in Nebraska, and I think I switched my arrow out like 3 or 4 times, and I have it on video, but we had these birds come in, and they're, you know, probably 50 yards out, and they're kind of skirting us, and they're kind of looking at the decoys, but, you know, they're like, eh, and Ears is calling, you know, just lightly, you know, throwing a few, like they start moving, and then he'd throw a couple clucks, and then they'd stop and look, you know, and he's like, finally he goes, okay, I don't think they're coming in. He's like, you think you can make that shot? I'm like, certainly willing to try.
Right.
So I had a bullhead arrow on. Mm-hmm. So I take that off and I put one of my long distance missiles on, you know, it's got a Grim Reaper expandable on it. And I'm like, okay. And I'm just about to draw back. And he was like, wait, quick. Throw the bullhead back on. So I take the arrow off, put the bullhead back on. The birds kind of start to come in a little bit, and then they stop. And then they start to turn and go away. He's like, get the Grim Reaper. So I put the bet. So I hear him switching out again.
Zero pressure. And I love this. Zero pressure.
I'm like, all right, here we go. And I'm like just about to draw back, and he puts a different call in. And this goes back to what you're talking about different cadences and having different calls. Mm-hmm. He does just a couple of tiny little clucks, and they both turn, and they both just start hauling in. Mm-hmm. It's just unreal. He's like, put the bullhead back on. So I like, take that arrow off, put the bullhead back on. And then they come right into the decoys, and we had a GoPro in the decoys. And it's really hard to see because it was a Black 3, a GoPro Black 3. So this is like probably 2011 or 12, something like that.
Did they have the Black Sears back then?
Yeah.
It wasn't, okay.
Yeah.
It was the Hero.
Super old. And it didn't have, it just didn't have the frame rate on them back then, you know, and it's still 1080 or whatever. So it's really hard to see, but the bird comes in, and then that's the one that I shot, and the blade kind of went all the way down his neck or whatever. And he just takes off. But that was a pretty wild,
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. I mean, you're bouncing back and forth, and you just got to keep yourself in check. It's like, okay, now mentally you're preparing for a longer shot, and mentally now you're preparing for a shorter shot. And then also to pop the arrows in and out several times. Yeah, that'll test your grit, as they say.
It's pretty wild. I feel like I got pretty lucky because, again, that's one of those ones where everything happens so quick that I don't really remember taking the shot. But it worked out. So
that GoPro video now, is it just like a, you see that smudge? That's the bird.
Yeah. So, yeah.
See that little streak? That was the arrow.
Yeah.
Yep. I promise.
I mean, it's actually really cool. Like you can see the decoy, and he comes in, But like, I didn't let him screw around too much, right? Like, right. As soon as he got into a spot where he slowed down and stopped. But it's like when you watch the video, it's like he's sitting there and then all of a sudden you're like, he just like bails out. And so, and then there's just like feathers all over the place. So it all happens so fast. Like mm-hmm. You can't see what's going on at all, you know, but it's funny too. Cause when I was watching the video the other day and there's probably, I think we must've waited like a half hour or mm-hmm. something before we went to look for that bird. Cause it ran around and we saw where it went. And it was up kind of behind some trees up on this hill, and we could hear some flopping around up there, but still didn't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took our time getting up there, but then we got around the bend and he was up there. And it was just like
done.
Blood everywhere. Oh, yeah. It was a massacre for sure.
So last time we talked a little bit about some of the calling techniques and like the wing bone deal.
Yes.
Did we reach like the body language thing? Because you kind of had me thinking of that with the whole ears, saying 50 yards and then this sort of thing. I guess how does Frank read body language, and is there maybe some different calls that you're running in there too?
Yeah. You know, normally you're seeing them off in a distance.
Yeah.
You know, with the way that, you know, like field edges and that. And I try to situate myself if there's like multiple fields, on each side of the fence type of deal. Cause a lot of times too, they'll come into the fences, and they'll go down it. So you can kind of use it as like a buffer and then, make out some trails and stuff too, where they do slip under. So you can kind of get them to be in a certain way, but the commitments of the bird, you know, if they're out there and they're kind of looking, they get later in the year and they're like, you come to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, he's been working all season, and he's like, yeah, I'm interested, but you're gonna have to come to me. Yeah. So then that's where you're bouncing different calls, just some subtle putts and purrs, you know, that, you know, do the seduction thing. And then instead of calling directly at him, you know, you can deflect the calling, turn opposite, call maybe out of the back of the blind a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And that make it sound like it's moving around, or maybe there's another hen or there's a Jake or something that's behind the blind. Cause then you can use that as a buffer too. Like get them inquisitive, like looking like, oh my God, there's something, it's moving off. So you can actually kind of sound like you're moving away, you know, and that's, I'll even do that with deer hunting too. Instead of just calling directly straight at you, you know, cause then it's like, well, you're right there, I should be able to see you. Yep. It's like, no, if now I can deflect it and throw it, you know, down a ridge or off of some place where they can't see, that might pull them in too.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if they're coming, I mean, geez, you're running, you know, you putt purred twice and it's coming Mach 5 at you. Well, you better get your bow. It's coming right in,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's going to hang up probably right in the set, which if you want to do one little putt as you're at full draw with your mouth, let him have it.
Yeah.
Or you got a diaphragm calling, you could do that as well. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's interesting. And a lot of times too, you know, it's all about the hen, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you see that they're locked up, they're coming, and definitely it's just like a buck locked up with a doe. He's going where she wants to go. So now you're not thinking about him. You want the hen to come into the decoy. And a lot of times you get like a dominant hen, they'll just flare off and they'll take the tom with them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to almost intrude upon her area. So you listen to what she's doing. A lot of times if you call identical to what she's calling, if she's being vocal, that'll tick her off. Mm-hmm. I've had them come in so mad and they'll come right into the set and they'll even come up and start picking at the hen decoy.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is good, because now it just pulled Big Daddy in there. Yep. And you can make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just like kind of a few little things. And, you know, don't overcall. You know, they know you're there. You're just listening too. If they're making some calls, pick up on what they're doing too for calls, so you can react and maybe even know if you know what like pitch levels you have in your calls. You know that's something already. If there's some hens out there, you know, try to mentally know which call kind of is in that same wheelhouse. So then grab that slate or that mouth call or even the box call. You can tone that down if But again, there, that's practice, you know, mm-hmm. practice, know your equipment and see what you can get away with, mm-hmm. you know, and that, those are just a few little things that I'm processing the whole time. It's a recipe, you know, and you're just listen to what the animal's doing visually, you know, okay, well, it's acting like this. Well, if you want to hang up out there, well, I'm going to feel like I'm moving around. I've even, if they move off and they've already seen the set, if I've got two birds in there, if they're out of sight, I'll go out and I'll take one decoy away and stick it, just stick it on the backside of the blind, just throw it down or throw it in the blind with you. So now the next time, if you can get him to pull up and he sees one, it's like, oh, there is, there were two, now there's one. So maybe this isn't, because you get those overhunted birds,
mm-hmm. right?
You know, they see you the same 3 days and you're setting the decoys up the exact same every single day.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
they're kind of
yeah.
getting after, you mm-hmm. know, or been shot at by someone else. So they get kind of hip to what's going on. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of make that up or pull both decoys. Yeah. And then you're just calling. Now it's like, oh, well, they left. So now those were, I need to come and check that out. So
just, it's a great idea. I've never thought of that or heard anybody say anything yeah. about that.
And I've even done that too, where you get some birds that have moved off. You can get out of the blind and then walk down maybe like 75 yards and start calling and then start moving back to your blind or your setup and then just call a little bit. So you're actually moving.
Right.
So you can call and it's moving. It's mimicking a bird that's actually traveling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they're probably more apt to look.
Oh they, yeah. No, you know, I've had them come in. I've had them
moving away or whatnot.
Yeah. Cause I've even had them where they did go off. That was in Nebraska. And I did that, walked down a hedgerow and it was able to pull them back out. And they came right up in there, which was just fantastic. But yeah, just little things like that, you know, watch and see what the animal's doing. Try to read them. Study them as much as you can. That's like anything you want to pursue. You just got to kind of be involved in educating yourself with what they do and what body positions are happening and how they're calling and that type of stuff.
I think I ran into like similar sort of, I think my issue was probably the public land deal. Cause I remember like very vividly is like the most confident I've ever been my 3, now 4 years of turkey hunting, with calling, you know, I had one mouth call in and it's a little higher pitch and then hen starts ripping off and then she's a little raspy. So I grabbed my more raspy mouth call, start blowing that. And they had a tom with, and I ended up pulling in 3 hens, mm-hmm. and he was just hung up over here. I'm like, how? Like, the only thing that in my mind I'm thinking is because you know I had a quarter strut Jake, you know, and another hen decoy, and now I've got 3 live ones right in the set, and it's like the only thing I can think of maybe is just public land. Like, mm-hmm. he knows that spot because I know that spot and people hunt it really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking maybe that could have been it, but it was cool. Cause you know, that hen did come in. She did everything you were saying, you know, come in, start beating on that decoy. I'm like, sweet. You know, that got her in, but never secured the deal. And I think it's just because, you know, like he was off, but he's right on that fence line of private and public, but that was 70 yards away in full brush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was not coming. So I feel like that was just a scenario of maybe if I had private land, you know, that I didn't hunt 24/7 and, you know, take pop shots at these things with some mm-hmm. TSS loads, you know, oh, you can shoot them at 100 yards. You know? I think that was a little scare, you know, of, or that was his scare was just, you know, if I go in there, that's public land and I'm going to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I feel like those public land birds are a little, you know, they've probably been educated a little bit.
So educated.
Know, in a few scenarios. And, I was thinking about, you were talking about the calling stuff and, one thing that I've noticed too, and I remember this from a video when I first started getting into this, I watched this video from HS Strut. It's called So You Want to Be a Turkey Hunter. And I remember Ralph Cincerillo, or however, I don't know how you say his name, but Ralph he says, if you're calling and you got a tom coming in, you know he's coming in because he's gobbling, and then you can hear it's getting closer and it's getting closer. He's like, shut up. He's like, exactly. That's one of the biggest mistakes people make is they just keep hammering away. And it's like, just if he's coming in, just let him come in. Don't do it.
Yeah. And another thing is too, if you get him hammering back, you know, especially off the roost, you know, it's like, okay, cool. So they're going to, there's going to be that time when they fly down, and then if you call again and then they hammer, you know, again, what's going to happen is they're going to start to travel. So they're walking through the leaves, and it's, you know, that makes a lot of noise. So people will just keep like, you know, it's like, I got to call every single second. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, they're coming. Just back off the gas. Because because then it gets, they might be hearing other things, or you might actually push a hen off, and then he's going to go with that hen. So yeah, if they're coming, just let them come. And that's actually really good advice, that if they've hammered and they're coming, and you can see, or either see them, or you just can hear them coming through the woods with them gobbling, yeah, just wait. It'll happen. You don't want to overcall.
And the birds that I usually have come into the decoys, they don't, it's like you'll hear them call, you'll hear them gobble, and maybe they're, I don't even know, I'm not the best at judging this, but, you know, maybe still 100 yards out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might not even hear another gobble.
It's crickets.
But you're just sitting there waiting, and the next thing you know, he's on top of you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, again, like you said, you could, if you're sitting there and you're overcalling, it might, you know, draw them off, or something might not seem right. You know, maybe the pitch that you're calling at, or mm-hmm. something doesn't seem right, or whatever. And then the other thing too that I was thinking about is I've been able to get a few toms fired up by cutting them off, mm-hmm. like when yeah. they gobble, and then just hit the call like before they can even finish their gobble. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that sometimes that yep. will
are you
will prompt
running
them to
the
come
dominancy
through.
Thing?
Are you running like when you cut them off, you're cutting with a hen call? Or are yes. you gonna use, okay, just yes. clarification there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I've been successful with that a couple of times, you know.
Sam
but then
has taught me that too.
But then you get, I've been in situations where they'll come in, and then again they kind of hang up, you know, late season or whatever it might be. As soon as they get the visual of the decoy, and then they're just like, okay, and then they just sit out there and they strut because they're just like, well, I'm over here, I'm doing my thing, I'm not coming over there. And even sometimes, like some of the smallest things, like you know, they say a lot of times you want to try to avoid, like if you know where they're roosting. Based on where you're setting up, you want to try to avoid any barriers that may stop them from coming in, whether that be a creek or a fence line or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how sometimes they'll just hang up on that fence line.
Yep.
And they're not coming. They're not going to do it. They're like, you come over here, I'm not going through that fence.
That's how my first year was. We had Sam, when he was bringing me out, as a electric fence on a horse pasture, and just ran this way. We're set up on this side, and it's exactly what it was. They're just dancing around on this side. And I talked to Sam, I'm like, this is when I was practicing a lot and shooting a lot. I'm like, do I rip an 80-yard shot? And he's like, I mean, if you think. And I drew back, and I had that pin right on him. And I started looking at the other pins and roughly where I think that apex is going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that thing has to make it just under the tape to hit there. And I ended up just letting down because I'm like, I'm squeezing a fence shot and at 80 yards on a freaking turkey.
Thin to win, yeah.
And that, yeah. And so then we switch sides of the field, you know, the next time. Of course, they're on this side. Same thing. They just dance around that fence. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I've seen you two other times crossing fences, but mm-hmm. the times when we have the toms there will not come through. It's mm-hmm. just like, oh, my God, it's so funny how something they cross every day, something in the air where they just don't do it. Another yep. one I've had, and I don't know, maybe Frank's had it. I heard it last year. Some of these blinds, they have that. We were talking last week about the see-through blinds.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, they do have a little bit of a sheen to them. Mm-hmm. And a guy last year was using that blind religiously. He just loves that blind. No birds come in. He got rid of that blind, like just put it away, pulled up a, you know, fully normal blind, can't see through it, a little rougher material, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden birds were coming. Killed three times after that because he's bringing out kids. But sure. every time he brought out that reflective blind, I don't know if you've had that, but, you know.
Yeah, no, that's
part of setup anyway.
Kind of another point of, you know, getting your blinds out there like a couple weeks prior too so that they can get used to it.
Mm.
That helps. He could probably maybe take some fabric paint and stuff, try to knock that down a little bit.
Yeah.
Put that on there because, yeah, some of that material is – it's. Yeah, it's super amount of sheen that just refracts the light off there. It's just like you can see it from a mile away. Mm-hmm. Or what you could do too is, you know, get some brush or get some like camouflage netting and put that over it to help dull it down. Or there's other things to do, because you know, you paid a couple hundred bucks for the blind, you can't use it. That's a bummer. Mm-hmm. So, but you could, he could try some stuff like that, maybe brushing it in, or try to keep it more tucked in the shadows. And that that'll help.
Mm-hmm. Maybe know, this isn't
if available
strategy related, but what are your guys' thoughts on the blaze orange? Now in Minnesota, you have to have a blaze orange top. I believe it's blaze orange top, or you have to have wall panels on each side. Blaze orange. Do you think that'll affect the bird, or do you think more of that comes up to just set it out a week or two beforehand if you're not on public, and maybe they'll get used to it?
I think.
Well, but if you're not in public, you won't need it, right? So
yeah, true. My bad.
I don't. But. I mean, I don't. I think it's just more of a minor inconvenience. I couldn't say out of based on experience, because I've never had to do it. I mean, I get it. You know, you want to be safe, right? There are shotgun hunters out there, so you don't, you know, necessarily want to. But then at the same time, well, I'm trying to think we have always worn blaze when I'm out with my buddy Travis, you know, when we hunt on public ground. So yeah, I think it's just more of a minor inconvenience in it, more than anything, in my opinion.
But. So that's the blaze orange thing, that's when you're hunting, you need to have that out
on public land.
Okay. Yep. I mean, I definitely safety. I mean, there's Carlos Xavier, there's lots of stories there, you know, throughout the years, that it can be kind of sketchy because people just are getting a little too excited. And, you know, it's like they picked everything up the day before and they're heading out in the woods and they're, you know, kind of going out there willy-nilly, and some things can happen. So yeah, safety is a big thing. I guess I don't know what turkeys can see for colors. I don't know. So I don't know if it would affect them or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know either. I'm not sure about that.
So
I
don't know what their spectrum of colors are.
I'm a huge fan of it just for the safety, because I've I've been doing the public land, you know, trial and error, and there's a couple times I ran into a shotgun guy and I hear him calling in there. I'm like, bro, don't, like, hope to God he doesn't hear the leaves rustle, and like, I hope I have enough space between me and that TSS that's about to come flying.
So
I love it for the safety, but I'm just like, I wonder if they'll, you know, with their vision, if they'll throw them off. You know, a big old, hey, look at me, you know, I'm in a blind over here, and there's two birds in front of me.
Well, and that's the thing too, because you want to think from a standpoint of, if I was going to put it out, then I'd want the orange out all the time, but then that's not necessarily what they're trying to do. They're just trying to say, hey, there's someone hunting in this blind currently, that you need to, you know, be aware of. But if the color spectrum is affected by the bird, well, then you'd want that out all the time so that they get used to it.
Mm-hmm. This is really interesting. So I did not know this, but so obviously, as we know, they have monocular vision and periscopic vision, whatever, they can see, the eyes are on the side of their head, so they can see almost 360 degrees around. With just a slight turn of their head, their vision is three times sharper than a human with 20/20 vision.
Yep.
And color, they can see all colors, including UV light. I didn't know that.
There you go.
But this is according to Meat Eater Hunting, it says. Turkeys can see ultraviolet light, which can make brightly colored or UV brightened objects appear very visible to them. I didn't know that.
Yep, and you stick out like a sore thumb. And UV is more relevant. Put the relevant. Tide away. Yeah.
Don't wash your clothes in Tide.
Correct. Yeah, well, that in your hunt. Oh, God, we could go home.
Or any, UV brightener.
Yeah, UV is a
detergent.
Yes, yeah. Your standard Tide, three Tide pods and stuff, don't do that. I mean, if a turkey could smell, they would be virtually
impossible to
kill. So for whitetail and other animals that you're hunting, yeah, you don't want the smell of the Tide spring, whatever, because that will definitely deter any type of animals coming by as well. But yeah, the UV, that throws brighteners in there. It's your early morning, late afternoon. That's, you know, magic time, basically, when things are moving. But that's when you're going to be more visible with the UV. Cloudy days too. That's definitely, will be cloudy. You'll look, I think it's like a blue almost.
Yeah.
Light. You'll look. Yeah. You'll be glowing in the woods.
That's so wild.
You don't want that.
Yeah, it says that they have enhanced color vision, including 7 different types of photoreceptors in their retina. Yeah, I didn't know that. I knew that their sight was very acute and all those kinds of things, but I never really looked into like what they see on the color spectrum.
So that, getting back to like, hey, when I'm hunting in the blind, I have to throw my Blaze Orange out. They're going to see that immediately. They're going to see something different.
Yeah. And so now, I mean, who knows? I mean, this first 2 years, because they, I think, put that in effect last year, maybe birds are dumb to it because they hadn't seen it in the prior years. And I was just curious, you know, not to sidestep, you know, our strategies and everything for turkey hunting, but I was just curious what your guys' thoughts were on the Blaze Orange.
That's a very good point. There's a lot of people that do public. Yeah. So they're going to be in that scenario and they might be going, get a bird in. Well, this could be one of the reasons why when you're there, you're throwing that orange out, which is good for safety. But then now the bird's going, I've been going by here for months and now, or I'm used to the blind. This 2 weeks I got used to that, but now they're throwing, you're throwing this new thing at them that they have to, you know.
Mm-hmm. And if they can actually see full on Blaze Orange along with the UV, like,
just
put a big old flag out there, man.
Like, there's just a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of disruptors for them. Cause that's just something they're not normally seeing.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we talked a little bit about some mistakes, right? Like don't overcall, be careful about, you know, if the bird's coming in, you know, shut up, let them come in. What other, have you run into any like personal things that have had like mistakes where you're like, man, I wish I would have done that differently? Or is there any common mistakes that you know of that, that bow hunters often make that affects their success with turkey hunting?
I think pounding the same spot. And that's another thing too, is, and then setting up the exact same way every day with your decoys and calling the exact same way using the exact same call, you know, so that's why, again, it's nice. I mean, I have a plethora of calls, so I'm always bouncing around. So I'm sounding new or different or trying to, you know, mimic what they're doing. So, you know, mix it up, use one decoy, use two decoys, don't use any decoys. I got a couple of buddies that they kill their birds. They don't even set up a decoy. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll call and very sparingly, you know, they just want them to come in and look. So then they're coming through and searching. Every morning or every evening, or maybe mix up that, or, you know, hopefully you have a couple locations set up so you can bounce around a little bit.
Yeah.
Cause that's like anything, you can burn it out. Birds get educated. They're not completely stupid.
Right.
You know, Tom gets older for a reason, you know, they learn from things. Mm-hmm. It's like any other critter out there. If they're exposed to a traumatic experience, they're going to learn something from it.
Yep.
And they're going to shy away from that type of scenario. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think there's just kind of those things that I threw out there that can be, you know, indicators. And that's where you just got to keep going through your head. What am I doing? Or why am I not seeing them? Or, you know, if they've changed their feeding pattern, they're not there. Well, you need to move.
Yeah.
You need to pack up and hit a new spot.
That's the hardest thing, I think, for me. And probably a lot of people, the patience of it, because, you know, many times I'd go out in the morning with, you know, whether it's Sam, myself or whatever. And Sam kind of taught me that too, where like the burnout of a spot, like, you know, in the morning they were there, let's just go back in the evening. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you cut off the root to their roost, and maybe they get too close and you can't shoot them yet, they'll keep track of it. Okay. Not going back there, but it's so hard. Cause like, oh, this morning, they were all fired up. I want to go back so bad. But almost every time, you know, he'd always just say, no, we're going to a different spot. But I think it is a good call to just, you know, to switch it up. Like don't put all your eggs in that one basket, you know, have your different locations, like you're saying. And, you know, just as tempting as it is, switch it up. Like, try a totally different side of the field, because who knows, they might have moved during the day. And I don't know, I've been more wary of that in the last 2 years now. It's just like, okay, they were there this morning, and damn, do I want to go back. Yeah. But you know what? I might go and try a whole different piece, know, that I have history with.
Then you avoid burnout, too, because it's just like with anything else, you're just trying to really do this, and it's just like not coming together. So
4 a.m. every day.
You don't want to start hating it. You know? So get yourself in a new situation.
And then you're sitting there like, it's rainy. And it's 4 a.m. and it's the 20th day that you've been out. You're like, oh, I really don't want to do this now. I don't even, why am I even hunting?
Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit earlier, but another one would be, you know, probably just not practicing enough or practicing in the scenario that you're going to be hunting in. That's probably another big one. Hollywood, I know he can attest to this. Another big mistake that I know I've made multiple times, and I still never learned this, is make sure you got your thermocell with you or some sort of bug spray, because you'll be sitting in there swatting mosquitoes like you.
Yeah, you start slipping into May.
Oh.
And if we get some good weather, it can get a little ugly depending upon where you're at, especially if you're by any type of marsh areas, because they do like to go down on those edges and pick, and there's insects and all that stuff that start popping up. So, and of course, the frogs will start, they'll be going crazy too, which is cool to hear in the morning, especially in the evenings. But
those ticks and mosquitoes, man.
Yeah, yuck.
Oof. They'll drive you nuts. They will literally drive you insane. And I've never been in a situation where I've had to like be at full draw for an extended period of time with all those mosquitoes, but I can't even imagine, right? Like you're trying to come, you know, trying to focus and you're getting zapped.
Oh yeah, that's
all
like
over the place.
My second year or third year when I went out to whose spot, and I forgot the thermocell. Man, I just sat in that blind, and I had the Vapor Trail hoodie on with the strings, and I had that thing cinched. Yep. And I sat there with my hands in the the like pouch in the middle, and I didn't even move. Like I knew they were out there, but I'm like, I'm not even looking, man. Like it was just torture, and just a little bit of my face that was open. It was just hell. And then thankfully, I didn't have to be at full draw, because that's where I like thought I heard something. I like look out. I'm like, oh my God. Like here I am scrambling for a release, pull up, done. Like just that quick. I'm like, okay, I'm running so fast back to the Forerunner to get some freaking mosquito spray.
We have some serious like mutant mosquitoes up here that have like a 2-inch proboscis, I swear. Like they'll get you through like four layers.
Yeah.
You're like, how is this happening? I have
hybrid mosquitoes.
It's like they have a hummingbird like beak. Like you just feel it all the way through,
getting just right through it.
Oh, it's terrible.
That can be the worst armor.
Thermocell, big mistake if you forget it.
Don't do that. So we're gonna pivot to another big topic that's somewhat debatable as well, but weather conditions. What are your favorite weather conditions? What are the kind of ones where is there ever a situation where you're just like, the weather's not my favorite, I'm not going out?
I like, sunny days. I like that crisp, like going from a crisp morning and the sun's, waking everything up and it's starting to heat up. And then it kind of slowly gets them going again. It's kind of like I'd said before, is, we get up, we just that normal routine. Because that's what they're coming off of that, that cold type of year, and you get up, you want to stretch your legs, have a cup of coffee, and then they're kind of easing into their day, and they're coming in, they want to feed, and then transition that way. And I think it's comfortable for me, I think they're just in a better mindset early. Rain, you can be out there, because again, blood trails are virtually null and void with the turkey, so you better visually see it if it happens to, get up and fly or run in a certain direction. Blood trails are very minimal, although there's sometimes you can have some blood, which again, any evidence is a good thing. If they're, if it's windy, oh good Lord, that's just really tough. They want to hunker down and get in the bottoms. They're just probably tucking in under some spruce trees and stuff too.
Well, and here,
you could go after them and you could, spot and stalk some maybe.
Yeah.
I can't do that anymore, but, that might be that opportunity, because now they can't hear you,
yeah,
because of all the rustling and all that stuff. And it seems like when the rain is, I don't know why, they like to congregate in an open field somewhere,
yeah,
which is weird.
I've heard that it's because, you know, when they're in the woods, again, the rain coming down inhibits their ability to hear as well. So when they get out in the wide open, then that way they can use their eyes, you know, so like a coyote's not going to be able to approach, you know, very easily or quietly. Predators. And so that's a great time to like do scouting and stuff like that too. Like if you're in a situation where you don't want to go suffer out in the rain, or if it's like super windy too, you know, just a little road hunting's always, you know, you cruise around the roads and you're more likely to see them out in the open.
Yep. Admire from afar. Hopefully then make some changes too. It's like, oh, I didn't even know they're going over there. It's like that. Or chunk. Cause right now too, we're getting into this, you know, they're in larger groups, but now they're going to get smaller. They're going to start to go off in their little cliques. And, it's nice to know where they're going to end up because like right now, they're right here every single day, but now that's going to change because, you know, breeding season's coming and they're going to start to break those off and you're going to have your little cliques everywhere. So it's good to relocate and figure out where they're going. And as the season progresses too, that just happens more and more. So.
Yeah.
Kind of forgot about those windy days. They do suck. They're just kind of pointless. Like now that I think about it, like maybe not completely, maybe the spawn stock, but your calls are going, you know, this way, you know, the roost is that way. And they never seem to move very well in that. And maybe with the rain, like if you get a lucky day where you know it's going to end at 2 p.m., maybe you can see them out in the field when you've been driving, then cut them off going back. So maybe one side of the field or another. Hope you catch them there after they're done drying out. That'd be probably a good move too. The rain definitely sucks. I was thinking it's very timely because like last night it rained and rained pretty good. Storm. I feel like I see a lot of birds the next morning. Like we have a bluebird, you know, sunshiny day right now. Do you see the same? I mean, I feel like those days seem to be pretty good for when I'm out there. No, I haven't killed a lot yet, but I see a lot of birds and I think it's just because they're trying to get out of their wet woods. I don't know. I mean, is that something you look forward to? Or
it would have been a fun morning this morning.
I think so too.
I think they would have gotten off the roost and just kind of traveled really slow.
Yeah.
You know, like 9, 10 o'clock, I think it would have been just like dynamite.
Yeah, because you said you were seeing some action this morning, and Jeremiah did too. Both of you guys came in saying, boy, they're getting fired up. You know, and who's to say what's going to happen here? We're not quite halfway through April. And I don't want to say it. But there's no snow on the ground right now, and so
it can happen.
So that early season hunting is going to probably be pretty good because it's what, the 16th it opens
next Wednesday.
So next Wednesday, and then I'll be, my first day out will be that following Monday, the day after Easter. But yeah, I think to your point, they're just like any other creature on the planet where it's just like, you know, spirits are going to be up a little bit better when the weather's nice and you know what I mean, you're tired of hunkering down, you know, in a group, you know, everybody as a, you know, as a sentry watching out, you know, for the predators and making sure you're not going to get whacked, and you know what I mean, it's just like sunshiny day, Disney Bambi opening, and
just this wonderful mythical event that's going to transpire right to script.
Well, and the other thing too with rain is, you know, anytime somebody kills a bird in the rain, it's like that hero shot. The thing looks like
horrible.
A wet rat.
I feel so bad for peeps. You know, it's like, oh.
But Frank, you got a good technique. Usually you get them home, you hit them with a hairdryer, right?
Yep. Just keep hitting them with the hairdryer and try to get it to look presentable again, because it looks like a drowned rat, you know. I mean, it's just, I mean, you gotta dry it out anyways, you know, if you want to, you know, make a plaque out of it, or if you want to give it to someone that, you know, ties flies or does some artsy type stuff with that too, so but yeah, that can just look horrible. There was some that was posted, some friends, and I'm like, oh man, I feel bad. I mean, they doubled up, but it just both of them, it's like, oh.
Yeah, they look terrible.
Yeah, well, and sometimes you don't have the opportunity. You might, they might have been, I think they were on a guided type of deal, so that didn't have the ability to have that stuff there to dry it out to get the pictures and stuff. It's like, oh, man, nice birds. You can't take that away from them. That's great that you stuck it out there.
I don't remember the importance of it. Maybe it's just the fact that he shot another one with a bow, but Damon, he has that one bird he smoked, and it flew off and landed right into a creek. And it's like a photo of him right after he gets it from the creek. It's like, that thing's ugly as hell, man. I'm so sorry you shot that. Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, man. So we talked briefly, like, just a little bit about it, and I don't know that we can get super deep into this because, like you said, you know, blood trails are usually slim to none, but any advice on tracking or retrieving turkeys after a successful shot and or a maybe not so successful shot?
Yeah, immediately. Well, hopefully you have a drop right there, right at the decoy. I mean, that's, like, awesome. Mm-hmm. But now if it, you know, if it runs off, that's better than flying off. Normally that's going to be hopefully a shorter deal, but yeah, watch that sucker, you know, and, I would give him 40 minutes easy right out of the gate before I'd even do any, I would not leave the blind. I just set my bow down and now you're just freaking out. Cause you, you're like, I didn't see him tip, you know, and hopefully that's where you last seen it. It's 10 yards and it's laying there.
Yeah.
Great. Right. So, yeah. But if you're on a field edge and there's so now basically what they're going to do, they're going to try to tuck into somewhere for safety. So whether it's you're on a hedgerow or edge of a field where there's tall grasses, a lot of times they'll tuck into a berm, or if they make it into the woods, they'll go into a pile of brush or a down tree or limb or something. They'll duck even into that and you'll find them dead in there. But yeah, give them plenty of time. Don't be in a rush. And then when you get out of the blind, it's going to tell everything. So if you go over there and it ran off, of course you're going to see your impact, hopefully your arrow's there. And then that'll kind of tell you some things too, you know, look, what type of, is it any bubbling on there or color of it? It's more muscle or the type of hit. And then hopefully you got a little bit of a blood trail, and then that's, you know, you're starting to look for feathers or blood trails and that type of stuff. And of course, if it's windy out, that sucks because the feathers will blow everywhere. But if there's no wind, situation based again, you may have a little bit of a trickle trail to get, you know, to the wood line or whatever. But then it's, you know, really start to pay attention to gobs or, you know, any little things that they can tuck into. I've had them tuck just under a limb or a little, some brush, just that's where it was. So, and you know, take your time, look, you know, maybe for scuff marks, because if it's trucking through there too, you'll see the leaves that are, you know, toughed up. Get that general direction, and you know, you can start gritting it, and you know, hopefully maybe you got someone with you, then, you know, another set of eyes is always better. And then if they flew, man, hopefully you see it fly and it hits the edge, then just mark it with a tree or a post or some type of identifier that you burn that in your head. That's where that's at. And again, I give it 45 minutes to an hour before you even want to start looking. So, and then when you hit that edge, hopefully again, it might be 5 yards in, just right where it hit the edge of the field line and it's laying there dead.
Yeah, they're very, their camouflage is pretty unbelievable. My buddy Travis shot a hen 1 year. You can shoot hens in the fall here in Minnesota. And we tracked her, and same thing, went into, you know, it was like a windbreak in between the two fields. And I mean, it was, I just barely caught her eye blinking. Otherwise, probably never would have saw, never would have. I mean, I was like staring at that spot forever when I saw that movement, but I still couldn't make out a bird until then. I really started to, you know, peer in on it and started to basically be able to see the shape of, you know, of her head and everything. And I was just like, unbelievable how well they blend in.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the thing. You really got to go slow, take it slow, and just keep your eyes peeled. Like you said, that's great advice. Have you know, a couple sets of eyes if you can, because they will just hunker down. I mean, I was probably only 5 feet from her.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, she wasn't going to go anywhere. But, you know, so then it was like, okay, let's bring the shotgun over and, you know, done. But, yeah, so that's great advice. I like that. That's really good advice.
Especially out west, you get, it's a little, I'd say, well, no, Nebraska. Like the where we used to hunt there, there's a lot of pasture and then crops. So you had very limited amounts of areas that they could tuck into, but it's amazing how hard it was to find. You know, you really had to spend the time. You know, it's if you can get lucky and it, you hit it and it goes off and dies in the field, well, you big lump in the field, that's like the best case scenario. But yeah, but it's even amazing, like even as open it is in out west in Nebraska there that we're at, you just had to, there's still spots they can slip into and they just disappear and you're going, oh. But you find them, you're going, I walked by them 5 times.
Yeah.
You know?
They turn into a log.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yep.
One of my birds did that, hid right underneath a bunch of brush that fell over. And I'm like, man, if I, to your guys' point, if I didn't go slow, like, probably would just walk right by. Like,
yep.
No way. Because that was the first one I shot, just Roadrunner straight to the woods. It's like, oh, great. Yeah. Couldn't fly, but yeah. You know, camo was just insane.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, they're beautiful birds, and there's a lot of iridescent colors there, especially when they're coming in a, you know, their full strut and the light's hitting them. But, yeah, they can tuck into a shadow spot or just into some brush. Yeah, they can disappear real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, they can. So we don't really need to get too deep into this, but I figure we should just talk about it a little bit, especially for anybody who's new, is safety and ethics. You know, I think, you know, it all kind of goes without saying, but as far as, you know, safety goes, I think, you know, you always just want to know what's on the other side of your shot, you know, personal safety too, when it comes to like broadheads and stuff like that. You always want to be careful as far as like how you're handling, you know, your arrows, especially in a blind too. Sometimes you're in tight quarters and if you got a couple other guys in there, you know,
definitely absolutely, want to
be
careful, yeah.
Be very mindful.
And yeah, and ethics, you know, it's you owe it to the animal to make the best shot possible. So, you know, do your due diligence and practicing and knowing your equipment and knowing the anatomy of the birds. There's some great information out there for shot placement where they have diagrams, you know, in a 360 type format. So you can see it, you know, where things align and, you know, in a normal position or a strutting position or a half strut, that starts to move. You don't see that the body line changes immensely with turkeys. So, you know where to put the shot and, you know, don't take the shot if it's not there. Know your borders and fence lines, be respectful of others and don't be trespassing. That's such a big pet peeve for me because I know what it's, takes to make a piece of ground work and to get the animals up to the populations or the sizes and stuff that you're doing, especially if the neighbors are doing the same thing. I want to be respectful of that and mindful of that. You know, and on public land too, you want to know who's, you know, or where boundaries are and stuff too. Just being safe of traveling around when you're hearing other birds, if you're spotting and stalking and you're going up on it, you know, kind of have it in the back of your head that maybe that is someone else, you know, so make sure that you're seeing everything that you need to see because it could actually be someone else and they have a setup and, you know, it's exciting. I mean, it's hunting and you will come across people, other people in the woods. I've done that as well. And then like even a piece of ground that I'm on and I have, there's other hunters that are there. Be mindful. I mean, we all talk to one another and know when we're going to be down there and who can help and who's going to be hunting where. And so you're not crossing paths and just being respectful of their time too. So those are just kind of a few things I can throw out there.
Mm-hmm. I don't think this is the safest thing to do, especially if someone is newer, or maybe they just can't pick up on calls very well. I've been pretty blessed to be around people that brought me to some good spots where I can know what a real bird sounds like. But mm-hmm. like the one guy that came in with a shotgun on public land late, like he actually did sound like a bird on the one call. So I gave it just one little, you know, cluck back, you know, just a hen call. And that second call he threw out, I instantly heard it. I was like, oh, dude, that's another call. Mm-hmm. Like right away. And I knew it was the shotgun guy I've ran into out there in previous times.
Right on.
And as soon as I heard that, like you were saying with the spot stock, like you might think you're coming up on a bird. Thankfully, this guy is not as good of a caller. So I heard it and I skirted right to the other side of the field. I'm like, yep. If he thinks my one little call back was a bird and he's going to be that shotgun guy that just starts throwing them, mm-hmm. I ain't going to mm-hmm. be anywhere around.
Yeah.
I think another one is like, I know that I think you mentioned it before, the Carlos Avery, the big public spot. I think people have been shot out there because they're carrying the bird, you know,
yeah.
right over their back. So those blaze orange, you know, bags is another one. I don't even have
that's
one.
A good point.
I really just, I guess I run the risk, or I also, what I do have, I usually go out with my Mystery Ranch pack because I can stuff all my decoys in it and everything, like put my bow on it, put extra layers. It's pretty convenient. Mm-hmm. But my plan is if I'm ever successful on public land, mm-hmm. I'll just stuff the bird in there.
Right.
Then you can't even see it. You know, then it's out of question, and mm-hmm. and just play the rest of common sense and, you know, safety after that. Mm-hmm. I think those bird bags are a good idea too.
I just shake my head though at that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's on the flip side of that, if you're hunting and you see a turkey floating by upside down with its head flopping around, don't shoot it. But yes, we do have to be cautious of those kinds of things, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And so that's an excellent point. You know, make sure that your bird is covered up, you know, when you're carrying it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if you got your, like your backpack too, or you got you can pull out the orange deal or put it in your backpack,
even a blind,
you know,
bag.
Just a swath of blaze orange something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if you got an old vest, just put it around the bird.
Yeah. I don't care. You can wash it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've thought worst case, just throw in the blind bag. I'll carry the freaking blind by hand.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
It's easy for me because I just get on my e-bike and then.
Yeah, yeah, private there, land, so guys.
Shoving my little pouch in the back.
And I do have private land. It's just our private land. I mean, the birds, we're in the middle of a state park. They have thousands. They're so inconsistent. So mm-hmm. I don't even touch our private land. Mm-hmm. There might be a bird that comes through, but it's every other 10 days. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not even a rhyme or reason. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well, if you in public land too, or even some private stuff that, and sometimes that happens, like you think you're the only one out there and then there's another truck, you know, and then maybe they got permission that, you know, that was unbeknownst to you, but leave your phone number and contact information. Just say, hey, you know, please, you know, give me a call. I'm hunting out here too. And just, you know, whatever, something short and brief, but then you can at least have a conversation saying, oh, I didn't know that you were hunting. You know, what days do you think you're going to be, just so I can be out of your way. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. So yeah,
I think that's a great one too. Like if I've been lucky enough before, and if anyone else is, to catch that person in the parking lot, I just tell them, hey, you know, this is my plan. What's your plan? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if they've already been there or whatever, I've been kind enough before, like, okay, yeah, you take that spot. I'll just go mm-hmm. over here and try it, you know, and just kind of almost a teamwork sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it's just so we're not shooting each other.
Well, and out west too, I've come across that, and you come across other hunters, more so like on the mule deer side of things, but I was turkey hunting out there too. They roll up, have a conversation. They're like, oh, I'll just go down and I'll hunt down this other section, 'cause there are, you know, more vast areas to hunt. So either like, yeah, I'll bounce, or we can split it. You can hunt this area and that area and just come to some sort of agreement, so you're being safe. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have the conversation, and you might learn a little bit more about the properties or some other areas that you could even hunt that you didn't even know you could. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you'd mentioned, you know, making sure you're having ethical shots and respecting the animal, and, you know, definitely want to respect wildlife and nature as well. You know, of course that encompasses a lot of different things. You know, all the way from, you know, honoring the animal by you know, cleaning them up, getting a good hero shot with it, you know, mm-hmm. Which in some cases is difficult, but, yeah. you know, again, and then also, you know, nowadays too with social media, I mean, it just blows my mind, but there's people that are like abusing animals, you know, deer, like sure. kicking them around and doing, you know what I mean? Like just yeah. stuff like that. Just not necessary. It's sad that I have to say it, but you know, just respect the wildlife, nature, clean up your trash. You know, a lot of guys like to sit in a blind and, you know, you're eating snacks in there and, you know, you're
don't leave litter. It better than what you found it.
Exactly.
The old saying.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go way back. That's a mistake. I never bring snacks. So everyone, hopefully got this far, bring snacks every time. I'll be hunting with another guy and here's Charles just ripping snacks out. I'm like,
yeah, no.
Damn, because usually I skip morning. Like, I don't eat till usually like 1 o'clock. And,
right.
well, when you're sitting out there, you've already been up since 4 or 3, you know, 2 in the morning. It's like, mm-hmm. man, you start getting hungry. Mm-hmm. And you're shivering a little bit, swatting mosquitoes, just breaking a sweat from killing them.
yeah.
Bring snacks.
Have need, some water with you, too. That's good yeah. to be hydrated.
Yeah.
Bring
yeah.
snacks and water, but pick it up.
Yeah.
Yes.
What you need to do is go to Instagram, go to Sam Soholt's page and like everything that he does so that it frequents your algorithm so that you're always reminded to never go snackless.
You know what?
Dude, hashtag Sam, never go snackless.
Sam has one of the biggest pro tips I've yet to do. And now that you said that, I'm going to do it. Flipping 30-ounce Yeti.
Biscuits and gravy.
Oh, I didn't even see that one.
What?
Maybe it wasn't him. He might have reposted it. Someone stuffed a whole Yeti full of, what are they called? The pizza things.
Pizza Hot Pockets rolls? Or pizza rolls?
Pizza rolls. They stuffed the whole thing full of pizza rolls.
See, that's
like,
different.
That looks that's, so good. Like, that's just pretty cracking slick. The seal on a Yeti and you just get that whiff of a pizza roll. Mm. Oh, man, I could crush a whole thing of those.
I think the other thing, too, that he does is he takes, like, a Mountain House biscuits and gravy, pour it into your Yeti.
That's
and then
brilliant.
Fill it with water, seal it up, throw it in your pack. By the time you know, it's, so it sits brilliant. In there and you pop it
well,
open.
Well, with these breakfast. Early seasons, I've even done this. I'll have my little buddy heater. You know, for the early mornings, so it gets a little
Frank's
bit cool.
Bougie
so
like that.
You actually can pop the gritting off. I bent it, so you can flip it, and it's a little shelf. So if you got some Pop Tarts, you just throw them on there. You can heat up in a sandwich too. You can actually eat that up there. Turkeys can't smell it.
I love that.
You know,
Luke may have seen this. He seems to be more into like the ice fishing stuff. But some of the people have made like aftermarket mods on the Mr. Body heaters where you can put like a little grill on it, and yeah. you can just. Like
I've that's got one. Really, I actually have yeah. one of those as well. So, yeah. but I've actually rigged it where you can just—I bent it and it works up on each one of them. It's just like nice, when sweet. I used to be able to sit for 12 hours in a blind, we'd have little meals. You know, it was really neat. Just
yeah,
didn't never skip the.
I'm gonna use the Sam Soholt Yeti method because usually, usually I'm pounding public ground, so
yeah.
I'm a little far from home to mm-hmm. be snacking.
Yeah.
And it's so nice, too, because if it's, you know, in the morning or something, it's still cool out. You just pop a couple of those in your mouth, like, ooh, this is pretty sweet.
Pour it down your clothes, warm your whole body
You're warming up your core so you don't get hypothermia.
Yeah. Cool. Well, anything else? You guys got anything else you want to talk about? We got into a real serious conversation about an individual that I don't even want to say his name because I don't want to give him the day of time. The blah, blah, blah.
Time of day.
Time of day. Yeah. There you go. It's all good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything else?
No, I think that's, I don't know. Maybe Frank's got more.
I just think it's the guest with the turkeys. You know, you get thrown all this information and it, a lot of times it's hard to digest it, but you know, once you start doing it, incorporating it in, trying things, it's all turkey hunting, any type of hunting. It's all scenario based. So you just got to learn from each scenario. And then you just kind of collectively in your head, it'll just become kind of systematic and your success will get better. And the whole thing is, it's not about the kill. It's just about the experience being out there. And it's just kind of embracing Mother Nature and I mean, because that's where all the magic is. Mm-hmm. That's that happy place in life for me,
yeah.
and I know it is for you guys as well. So that's what it's about. It's not a competition. It's not, you know, something to gloat about. And, you know, it's just about a really cool experience that you get to partake in that's been going on for eons.
Mm-hmm.
So just get out there and enjoy it.
Awesome. That's
it.
That's the sage advice I was looking for. right there. Thanks, Frank.
Right on.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. You can find the video version of this episode on the Vapor Trail YouTube channel, so make sure you head on over, give us a like, subscribe, and hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. If you're listening, make sure you give us a rating and a review. Only 5 stars will do. And with that,
we're going to pack up our bows and go to the range.
Have a great day, everybody.
Peace.
Vapor Trail is now offering an exclusive discount to the Range Podcast listeners. Enter promo code TRP15, that's TRP15, at checkout for 15% off VTX bowstrings and Vapor Trail and Stokerize branded t-shirts, hats, and other gear.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.